Professional wrestling, like real life, is full of surprises. Hi, everyone. It's Freddie Prinze Jr. And it's no surprise I can talk wrestling all day, any day. Kind of like how State Farm agents can talk insurance and help you choose the right coverage. When it comes to important insurance decisions, let State Farm support you with the coverage you need backed with 24/7 support. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Imagine you ask two people the same 7 questions. I'm Minnie Driver, and this was the idea I set out to explore in my podcast, Mini Questions. This year, we bring a whole new group of guests to answer the same 7 questions, including Courtney Cox, Rob Delaney, Liz Phair, and many, many more. Join me on season 3 of Mini Questions on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. 7 questions, limitless answers.
Hey there, I'm Dr. Maya Shunker, and I'm a scientist who studies human behavior. Many of us have experienced a moment in our lives that changes everything, that instantly divides our life into a before and an after. On my podcast, A Slight Change of Plans, I talk to people about navigating these moments. Their stories are full of candor and hard-won wisdom. And you'll hear from scientists who teach us how we can be more resilient in the face of change. Listen on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Locatora Radio is a radiophonic novela,
which is just a very extra way of saying
a podcast.
I'm Dios FM.
And I am Mala Munoz.
Locatora Radio is your prima's favorite podcast hosted by us, Mala and Diosa.
We're two IG friends turned podcast partners breaking down pop culture, feminism, sexual wellness, and offering fresh takes on trending topics through nuanced interviews with up-and-coming Latinx creatives.
Known as Las Locatoras, Las Mamis of Myth and Bullshit, The Podcasteras Next Door, and Las Podcasteras Peligrosas, we've been podcasting independently since 2016, and we're bringing our radiophonic novela to the My Cultura Network to continue sharing stories from the Latinx community.
Welcome to Locatora Radio Season 7.
Take us to your network!
Welcome back to Locatora Radio. This is Capítulo 152. I'm Diosa.
And I'm Mala. Last time on Locatora Radio, we talked about gun violence and mass shootings. Tune into that episode if you haven't already. And as always, we encourage our listeners to take care as they tune into heavy topics and step away if you need to.
And on that note, today we're continuing our conversation about the decline and degradation of women's rights. We've been documenting this, and we really feel like it's bleak out here. And so we're going to continue this conversation today.
It's very, very bleak. We see something really disturbing and upsetting basically every day. I mean, maybe we are overexposed to bad news because we're constantly on Twitter, as you all know. But in that spirit, this is the Me Too Backlash episode. And this episode is building off of all of our episodes in a lot of ways. We've been podcasting since 2016, which means we very much podcasted through the Me Too movement, through the Trump presidency. And as individuals, Diosa and I, both professionally and personally, participated in the Me Too movement in our own ways. And if you've been listening to Locatora, whether it's been 6 years, 6 months, 6 weeks, or 6 days, you know that we've been talking about this anti-feminist, anti-woman wave for a long time.
Yeah, and, you know, while scrolling through Twitter, as we do, we came across a Vox article that dives into what many have observed, not just us, but women, feminists, journalists, folks that are online, have observed the mounting and undeniable Me Too backlash. And so this Vox article that we will link in the show notes was written by Constance Grady. She's a senior correspondent on the culture team for Vox since 2016, and she's covered books, publishing, gender, celebrity analysis, and theater. And so we're going to be referencing this article a lot, and we encourage all of you to read it and follow her work.
So a little bit of background into the history and timeline of what we have come to know as the Me Too movement. And this is a timeline that is being laid out again in this Vox article. In previous episodes, we talked about how there's not that much feminist media left anymore. And I think Vox is one of the few left standing. So going back in time, right, in 2017, we started to see public declarations from survivors talking about sexual violence in the workplace. Now, even though we started hearing this word Me Too in 2017, it was in 2006 that the Me Too movement was formally founded by activist Tarana Burke. So it took a whole 11 years for that Me Too phrase and the movement around it and under it to really reach the mainstream. A lot of you maybe heard of it through Alyssa Milano, right? But Tarana Burke credited as the originator who founded the movement in 2006. This also had a lot to do with the Donald Trump presidency.
Yeah, you know, I think that it took really like, it gained traction because it was like Hollywood elite talking about sexual violence. And as we know, like their workplace is Hollywood. But, you know, crediting Tarana Burke as the founder of the movement is so important because, you know, anti-rape, anti-sexual violence work has been happening for decades, for centuries. And, you know, as an audio archive, we want it on the record, which we've talked about before, as Mala said, like Tarana Burke was the founder. And while many celebrities became the face, like there are also hundreds and thousands of activists, folks that have been working in this space for a very long time. And so at the height of the Me Too movement, we saw not only survivors of sexual violence speak out publicly against their abusers, but we actually saw action for the first time in a really long time. Arrests were made, charges were filed, and powerful men who abused that power for quite literally years, think like a Harvey Weinstein, were facing legal, public, and real-world consequences for their action. And I think that's why the movement became so mainstream, because we were seeing real consequences for perpetrators.
And so some of the big names that came out of the Me Too movement, some of the most chronic violent perpetrators, it seems, at least in Hollywood, that we know of, Harvey Weinstein, Charlie Rose, Louis C.K., Kevin Spacey, these were some of the big names that tons of survivors were coming out, and they were sharing their stories about basically workplace sexual violence. Folks who were actors, actresses, writers, trying to break into the industry, already working in the industry, facing abuse and assault at the hands of powerful men in the industry like Weinstein, like Kevin Spacey. And now in 2023, journalist Constance Grady, she argues, and we completely agree here at Locatora Radio, that the backlash to that very public Me Too movement, the backlash to those legal and public and criminal consequences, that backlash has arrived.
No, I was just going to say, like, in full force, like, the backlash has arrived in full force, where, you know, we were talking about workplace, like, real workplace sexual violence during the Me Too movement, and a lot of the response from men was like, I don't even want to like say hi to anyone. I don't even want to like touch anyone's shoulder. Or you see folks like be very obvious in photos, like men like not putting their like hands anywhere, you know, which is, that's fine. But it also became so extreme where it's like, well, I can't do anything anymore, when it's like, well, we're talking about sexual violence here, you know? And it became very like minimizing, like, oh, well, no one can do anything. Everyone is so sensitive. Can't give anybody a hug anymore.
Very interesting, because not all men, right? Not all men.
That was the response. That was the response.
Not all men.
Yeah, from many men.
That was literally the response. We're not all like this. But it was also interesting because that language also, the USA that you just described of, oh, so we can't even give hugs anymore, you know, or else we're going to be labeled creeps. It's so interesting looking back because, wow, those guys were really like strongly identifying with the Weinsteins and the Louis C.K.'s, you know, like really identifying with them. And that is something that I think is really tough to kind of come to terms with, because that wave of like men identifying with powerful and violent men, is, we still see it. Right. You know, I mean, the backlash that we're seeing, I think, also includes this rise in these incel communities, their behavior, like the way a figure like Andrew Tate has gained so much popularity and steam. There, these men continue, and boys, like, this is not just right. adults, this is like teens, this is like young kids who are very heavily identifying with like misogynist, anti-feminist thought, and not just identifying, but like forming communities and rallying around this identity and acting on this like way of thinking.
As an actor, a producer, and a proud Latino father, my days can get very busy, which is why I make sure to dedicate time to what's important, like supporting my community through my work, sharing my Colombian and Venezuelan culture, and being present for my family, which is everything to me. Hey everyone, it's Wilmer Valderrama, and we're reflecting on what matters most. I start by giving thanks for good support in my life whenever I need to make the big decisions. How about you? If it's insurance you need, State Farm is there to help you choose the right coverage for you. And State Farm offers great support 24/7. Just call an agent. State Farm is also a big supporter of my Cultura Podcast Network by helping to share our Latinx voices. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Listen to new episodes of your favorite My Cultura shows wherever you get your podcasts.
Imagine you ask two people the same exact set of 7 questions. I'm Minnie Driver, and this was the idea I set out to explore in my podcast, Mini Questions. This year, we bring a whole new group of guests to answer the same 7 questions, including actress and star of the mega hit sitcom Friends, Courtney Cox.
You can't go around it, so you just go through it. This is a roadblock. It's gonna catch you down the road. Go through it. Deal with it.
Comedian, writer, and star of the series Catastrophe, Rob Delaney.
I shouldn't feel guilty about my son's death. He died of a brain tumor. It's part of what happens when your kid dies. Intellectually, you'll understand that it's not your fault, but you'll still feel guilty.
Alt-rock icon, Liz Phair.
That personal disaster wrote Guyville. So everything comes out of a dead end.
And many, many more. Join me on season 3 of Mini Questions on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. 7 questions, limitless answers.
This is Neil Strauss, host of the Tenderfoot TV true crime podcast, To Live and Die in LA. I'm here to tell you about the new podcast I've been undercover investigating for the last 1.5 years. It's called To Die For. Here's a clip.
All these girls were sent out into the world, and they were told, try to meet important men, try to attach yourself to important men.
The voice you're hearing is a Russian model agent telling me about spies sent out to seduce men with political power.
The war in Ukraine is also being fought by all these girls that are all over important cities.
For the first time, a military-trained seduction spy reveals how the Russian government turns sex and love into a deadly weapon.
If you want to kill your target, it's easy. You just seduce him, take him somewhere, start having sex, and then he's very vulnerable, so you can kill him easily.
To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Yeah, 1,000%. And, you know, when thinking about this backlash, right, being in full force, you know, we've talked about in 2022, Roe versus Wade was overturned. And a parallel that Grady makes, or a reference, I should say, Grady makes a reference to this feminist text called Backlash, The Undeclared War Against American Women. And I want to read this quote that she references. The problem of fashionable feminist activism, which is what we were just talking about a couple episodes ago, followed by extreme backlash, is a known problem for the American women's movement. It has been ever since it was chronicled by Susan Faludi in her 1991 classic Backlash, The Undeclared War Against American Women. Backlash was written in the aftermath of the Reaganite conservative 80s response to the gains of the second wave feminist movement of the 70s. Yet Faludi makes it clear that she's not talking about one particular moment in time. Instead, she's looking at a particular pattern of what she describes as, quote, flare-ups of misogynistic attitudes. And so anytime there's strides made in the feminist movement, we see a backlash. We see resistance from not just men, right, but systems, people in power, women also. And so it's this interesting thing to think about. Not, this is not just a 2022, 2023 backlash, but this is a pattern that happens in feminist movements or worldwide, in this case in the U.S. that we're talking about, where any strides that are made, there's going to be resistance. And I think we can, you know, when looking at this from an intersectional lens, like, I mean, look at the election of Barack Obama to then Donald Trump,
yeah.
Right? Any progress stride made, people want to reverse. They want to reverse course because they're afraid of losing power. And I think that this is
totally
a great example.
Great example. And so one of the greatest, most important strides for women, not just in the United States, but globally, is the right and access to abortion. There was a time where we had a constitutional right to access abortions. In June of 2022, the Supreme Court overruled Roe v. Wade, which was that protection for us. Roe v. Wade was a huge victory and advancement for women's health and bodily autonomy, not just reproductive rights, but the right to say what happens to our bodies, what we do with our bodies, and the way that we engage with the medical system, mm-hmm. right? So for any listeners who maybe are not as caught up on the Supreme Court overturning Roe v. Wade, the case of Dobbs v. Jackson Women's Health Organization, this decision made it possible for the first time since 1973 for states to completely and outright ban abortions with absolutely no exceptions. No exceptions, not even for survivors of rape, incest, and essentially no room to care for the health and well-being and livelihood of the expectant or pregnant person. And now what we've seen, once the Supreme Court opened that door, now a bunch of states have followed, and 13 states at the time of the recording of this episode have outright banned abortions.
Right. Yeah. Thanks for giving us that context. Because yeah, it's really important to know like the context of like why there's backlash right now, you know, and I think you like really like getting into the nitty gritty shows us that. And, you know, there's two areas that this backlash has two targets, right? According to this article that Grady identifies these two targets for the backlash, which is reproductive rights, as you just mentioned, and also financial freedom.
Mm-hmm. And like these financial freedom and reproductive rights, again, women having made huge gains in the past 100 years, which is not that much time. That's a very short period of time when we really break it down. A century is not that long. But, you know, we can vote. We can have bank accounts and jobs. We can wear pants. Like, this is basic human stuff, mm-hmm. you know? And so the slowly chipping away at it is very scary. They've already come for the reproductive rights. And so now let's talk about the financial freedom.
As an actor, a producer, and a proud Latino father, my days can get very busy, which is why I make sure to dedicate time to what's important, like supporting my community through my work, sharing my Colombian and Venezuelan culture, and being present for my family, which is everything to me. Hey everyone, it's Wilmer Valderrama, and we're reflecting on what matters most. I start by giving thanks for good support in my life whenever I need to make the big decisions. How about you? If it's insurance you need, State Farm is there to help you choose the right coverage for you. And State Farm offers great support 24/7. Just call an agent. State Farm is also a big supporter of My Cultura Podcast Network by helping to share our Latinx voices. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Listen to new episodes of your favorite My Cultura shows wherever you get your podcasts.
Imagine you ask two people the same exact set of 7 questions. I'm Minnie Driver. And this was the idea I set out to explore in my podcast, Mini Questions. This year, we bring a whole new group of guests to answer the same 7 questions, including actress and star of the mega hit sitcom Friends, Courtney Cox.
You can't go around it, so you just go through it. This is a roadblock. It's going to catch you down the road. Go through it. Deal with it.
Comedian, writer, and star of the series Catastrophe, Rob Delaney.
I shouldn't feel guilty about my son's death. He died of a brain tumor. It's part of what happens when your kid dies. Intellectually, you'll understand that it's not your fault, but you'll still feel guilty.
Alt-rock icon, Liz Phair.
That personal disaster wrote Guyville. So everything comes out of a dead end.
And many, many more. Join me on season 3 of Mini Questions on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. 7 questions, limitless answers.
This is Neil Strauss, host of the Tenderfoot TV true crime podcast, To Live and Die in LA. I'm here to tell you about the new podcast I've been undercover investigating for the last 1.5 years. It's called To Die For. Here's a clip.
All these girls were sent out into the world, and they were told, try to meet important men, try to attach yourself to important men.
The voice you're hearing is a Russian model agent telling me about spies sent out to seduce men with political power.
The war in Ukraine is also being fought by all these girls that are all over important cities.
For the first time, a military-trained seduction spy reveals how the Russian government turns sex and love into a deadly weapon.
If you want to kill your target, it's easy. You just seduce him, take him somewhere, start having sex, and then he's very vulnerable, so you can kill him easily.
To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Yeah, do you remember, I mean, I don't want to veer too off topic, but do you remember, like, being in Catholic school? Like, I remember there were days where, like, you had to wear a skirt. Like, yes. We had pants as an option, but there were, like, formal days where you, like, had to wear a skirt.
Everyone.
Right.
Not the boys. All the girls right. had to
all
wear
All the girls skirt. Had to wear skirts. Yeah.
I do remember that. For mass, for, like, special occasions, high holidays, what have you.
Yeah.
That was, like, your formal wear.
Yes.
Was the skirt or the jumper.
Yeah. So very early on, you know, we're indoctrinated into this policing of how girls, young girls dress, which we carry on into adulthood, and we police ourselves or we police each other. And so now, you know, going back to the financial freedom, you know, we're still in the era of, like, the wage gap. Like, it's depending on you know, who you are, if you're Black, Indigenous, at the intersection of all of those things, right? There's a huge wage gap. There's pay inequity. And so that's also something I think important to bring up when we're talking about financial freedom. Like, you have to work hundreds and hundreds of years, one sole person, to successfully earn the same dollar that a white man earns. And so in mm-hmm. the era of all of this backlash, we're still in a wage gap.
And the financial cost of being a woman, it's expensive to be a woman. It can be. People will point out, and it's been talked about, in addition to the wage gap, on top of the fact that we make less money on the dollar, our products, things that are made for us, quote unquote, and marketed towards us, are always way more expensive. And how does one go to work if they're menstruating and they don't have access to menstrual products, mm-hmm. right? And so we can look at the domino effect of all of these things right. and how they impact us.
And same, like, if you have an unwanted pregnancy, you are forced to then give birth, which also limits your financial freedom. Also, your resources have to be reallocated. Either you don't go back to work because now you're caring for a little child, or you have to allocate money to child services, caregiving, daycare. And we still don't have paid parental leave in this country. We still don't have access to daycare. Like, there's no infrastructure in place. Even at my university, at USC, with all their dollars, You know, I have women in my cohort that have children, and they're paying additional funds for daycare because the school doesn't have that infrastructure, you know? So it's not, there is no support for mothers, for working parents in this country. There's no infrastructure for it, and they're forcing folks to have babies with no net, safety net, no support. And that definitely strips the financial freedom, in addition to 100%. All the strides that women have made.
100%. And in the past I can't believe it's been 3 years, but we've been in 3 years post-pandemic, ongoing pandemic. But in the past 3 years, on top of all of that, if you have been a working mother, then you've been working from home and your kids have been learning from home. And I'm not going to get into, like, we're not going to get into, dads take care of their kids too. We're not going to get into all that right now. Okay. Because what we do know to be true is still in this country, women are doing the vast majority of child rearing.
Right.
And caretaking. They just are. Statistically, across the board, mothers spend way more hours taking care of their children than fathers tend to. And so we have this situation where over the past 3 years, now working mothers trying to hold on to their jobs so that they can pay to live, also having to like double up as teachers and ensure that their kids are doing their Zoom school and their Zoom lessons. And the impact on women has been severe.
I mean, thinking about the state of like everyone's meant, this is a generalization, right? But based on how we've been navigating the last 3 years, like the state of everyone's mental health, right? We've been in isolation, we've lost people, we've collectively mourned and grieved. And I don't think we've even as a country have really held space for the collective mourning, really, because we quote went back to normal right away. And so I think that with that, you know, it's like the emotional mental toll that mothers have to take, women have to take on, parents have to take on, and especially women, when it comes to running a household, there's so much invisible labor that goes into running a house. You know, if I just look at my own mom and think, I remember when I was little, I used to think like, how does my mom remember to do everything? You know, and now as an adult, I'm like, oh my God, because she was running a household, right? Like, and, you know, the men around us didn't have to, they just went to work and came back and everything was done for them. And so there is so much invisible labor, devalued labor, or not even seen as labor, right? Because it's invisible.
Yeah.
That goes into parenting, mothering, running a house. And so this is like the backlash to all of that.
It is. And if you're listening and you have like an amazing dad who sat down with you every single night and did all your homework and took you to your appointments and did everything and checked all the boxes, like, we're not talking about your daddy. Okay. Do not be offended. Like, I had a great dad growing up, but I still acknowledge that my mom was doing like almost everything that, like, I think sometimes people don't, like you're saying, people don't consider this stuff work. It's in the details. It's the small stuff that ends up being the big stuff.
Right.
And I think a really great example of this is there's that, I want to say it's that Jimmy Kimmel, Man on the Street, Hollywood Boulevard right. segment that he did where happy families, mom, dad, kid, loving parents, loving dad. And Jimmy is asking very simple questions, asking the mom like names of the kids' doctors, birthdays of all the kids, best friend's name. Moms like flying colors, A+, they know all the data, they got all the info, they got all the names, they got all the numbers. He asked the dads the same questions and most of these dads could not tell you.
They didn't.
And it's funny, but it's also wild and kind of sad.
Yeah, I mean, I can't relate. My dad has like not been the best father, you know, the relationship has been a work in progress, needless to say. But I mean, you know, I saw very much like the invisible labor that my mom would do at the house, very much like just knew so much about my life. Whereas, and even now, I think that carries over where, you know, my mom knows all my friends and my dad does in some way, but like my mom knows more about the happenings in my day-to-day life. And, you know, my dad couldn't tell you where I work, what I do, like those basic things.
It's different. It's very different. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think that it's similar. My dad was super involved and super loving and super there. Like, he coached all of our teams and like every practice and the games and very present. But my mom was like, she would do this thing. Like, this is like, these are the details, right? Like, growing up as a kid, my toes were a little like misshapen. Like, they weren't exactly, they're not as perfect as they are now. My mother would sit down and tape my toes every night before I went to sleep for years so that they would like grow in correctly. That is a mother's love, dude. Right. Like, those are the lengths that mothers go to.
Right. And oh, the choice, though, and this goes back to the conversation, like, your mom, I assume, right, made the choice, knowing her, made the choice to like have a family. Like, your mom wanted a family. You know, like the reproductive justice, the reproductive right to have the choice to become a mother. As we see, there is so much that goes into mothering. We haven't experienced it ourselves, but we've been on the receiving end of being mothered, right? And so we can appreciate and value all the work, both visible and invisible. And that's, I think, you know, why we're talking about that today. Because we see that to choose to have a child is such a personal choice. And we're now at a point where the federal government has taken away that right for us.
Totally. And our mothers also have worked our whole lives. Mm-hmm. On top of all that work in the house and in raising us and in mothering us, they also went to their jobs.
Right.
And people talk about, you know, the Scandinavian model and other countries and where women or mothers have more support, parents have more support. And we always compare ourselves to these other, like, quote, advanced nations. And we always come out like on the bottom.
Yeah.
We have the fewest resources, the fewest support systems. And I always sort of compare, honestly, I sort of always compare in my head, like, the United States is Disneyland. Like, it's animatronic, it's smoke and mirrors, it's the ride, mm-hmm. it's the merch, it's the water show, it's the light show, but it's a set, like, right. It's a facade. Like, there's nothing behind it, you know? It's very shallow.
Yeah, I was actually reading today that we are the only developed nation whose life expectancy has declined significantly, right? And, you know, this is decades now of poor infrastructure in healthcare, social security, education, public health, like across the board. And so to see now, like, the data that we're declining, our life expectancy is significantly declining, and we're a supposed developed nation. This is the reality right now of being a woman in this country. And, you know,
100%.
The last couple of episodes, we've touched upon Amber Heard and the Johnny Depp case. We've touched upon Megan Thee Stallion and Tory Lanez. And, you know, we talk about these celebrity cases. And the reason that we do that is because they are indicative of a dangerous trend. If this can happen to elite Hollywood, what is happening to us, to folks like us, the average, you know, person that is experiencing dating violence, interpersonal violence, sexual violence? And so it's important to talk about it and to identify what's happening.
So, and something important to note, as this article does, the Me Too movement was really based also in these workplace safety issues. Again, like, celebrities abusing each other, they often meet on set. They are in the same productions. They are coworkers. They're not just socialites. They're workers. They are laborers. They get paid really well. They're in the public eye. They live glamorous lives, but they are workers. So a lot of the online chatter, and even in conversations that we had with people, there was a lot of misunderstanding about the nature of the Depp Heard case. Folks seemed to believe or wanted to believe that this case was about whether or not Amber Heard was lying about Johnny Depp abusing her, which was not the case at all. It was a libel suit. And libel this is not the exact legal definition of the word libel, but essentially what that means is like you're making statements and putting things out there into the world that are not true, and that can impact the ability of the person you're talking about to work and to earn a living. That's what libel is. So if you if it's found that something you did or said is libelous, right, then you can be required to pay damages. And in this libel suit, both Johnny Depp and Amber Heard were found by a court to have libeled each other, both of them, and they were both ordered to pay money to one another. And important to point out, they had legal cases in the UK. They had legal cases elsewhere regarding the domestic violence in which it was found that Johnny Depp was responsible for acts of domestic violence and abuse against Amber Heard. But this most recent case that was all over TikTok, all over Twitter, all over the internet was not that. It was a libel suit. And it came about because Johnny Depp sued Amber Heard after she wrote an article and she didn't name Johnny Depp. She didn't accuse him of anything in this article. She simply referred to herself as a survivor and as a voice for other survivors. And it was that alone that brought this libel suit. That alone. And that should scare everyone. That's horrifying. What we can't even self-identify in vague terms in our writing without facing legal backlash, without facing lawsuits. And she has been ordered to pay, I don't even remember how many multi-millions of dollars.
Yeah. Again, I think going back to, you know, the celebrity cases and those decisions set legal precedent, right? And it's the macro affecting the micro and in very much, and that's the case. And so it is scary because now this is a case that's going to be used as precedent, as legal precedent. And so it affects all of us, every one of us. If you're a survivor, if you're speaking out, if you're sharing your narrative, you're sharing your story on social media, like many of us do, like many of us have done. And even if you're not naming the abuser, you know, you can potentially be sued. And so it is a very scary thing. While folks were making their little TikToks and spreading misinformation, disinformation, this is like the real ramifications of all of it.
Totally. Once again, this Vox article goes on to talk about other celebrity cases. Of course, Danny Masterson, who was on the cast of the original That 70s Show, one of his past victims was also a coworker. Megan Thee Stallion, Tory Lanez shot her. He shot her. And there's all this wild like backlash and vitriol and nastiness towards Megan Thee Stallion when witnesses, evidence, doctors, surgeons, photos, I mean, text messages, like what more does one need? But what we've always known and what has always been true is that when it comes to violence against women and children, evidence, witnesses, like those things don't necessarily seem to matter to the general public. And as again, Megan and Tori, going back to the idea of Me Too and the workplace safety origins, both working musicians. And what we've come to learn is that part of what set off Tori attacking Megan and shooting Megan was an argument between the two of them about the fact that she is the more successful musician. She's a Grammy winner. She's killing it. SNL, like she's everywhere. You know what I mean? Beyonce collabs. And it was after that he ended up shooting her. So I think all of this is really important because it also reminds us and it reminds me that like, it's so sad, but it's like, I would never expect, like if something horrible were to happen to me, like I have no expectation of like public support or empathy. And it's not accepting like, oh, well, I guess this is just how it is, but this is kind of how it is.
Right.
You know?
I mean, it doesn't mean we stop organizing or the work stops, but it's a reality. This is the state of the US right now when it comes to laws and violence against women.
Totally. Absolutely. So at this juncture, I think we're going to continue to see, like we've seen whispers of like, is Brad Pitt going to come out and file his own libel suit against Angelina Jolie? Are we going to see these other men who have in different ways been called out or had consequences? Are they going to take the Depp route and file their libel suits? Because now there's a legal precedent. They know that they can make money. They know that they can spread misinformation and disinformation through social media, right, through Twitter, through TikTok.
And I want to add, because we did bring up Louis C.K., you know, he was, quote, canceled. And he is selling out Madison Square Garden in 2023, you know. So what real consequences, you know? So just something to keep in mind. And we're going to continue to have these conversations as they come up. And so we definitely want to thank the journalist Constance Grady for this very in-depth analysis that we referenced a lot in this article. So, in this episode. So again, we're linking it in the show notes. Please go read it, support, get to know some of her other work, because it very much informed this episode and the things that we have been having, the conversations that we have been having privately, Mala and I, which is why we brought this episode to you today. So we know it was a heavy one. We don't want you to feel disempowered. Just know that there's still lots of work to be done and the fight continues. And we're going to continue talking about it here at Locatora Radio.
Absolutely. And like we've talked about in past episodes too, women can become vessels for the patriarchy and for misogyny. And I think that that's part of what we're seeing as well. If you guys are observing and noticing these things, we're noticing the same stuff. So thank you for tuning in. We'd love to hear from you guys. You know, you can leave us voice notes on our website, locatoraradio.com. We have a speak pipe. If you want to go and share a story, an anecdote, an opinion, an observation, another article or example, please feel free to do so. But in the meantime, this has been another episode of Locatora Radio. Thank you for tuning in.
Thanks for tuning in. Besitos.
Besitos.
Locatora Radio is a production of Locatora Productions in partnership with iHeart's My Cultura Podcast Network.
For more podcasts, listen to the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
Besitos. Locatora Radio, a radiophonic novela.
Hosted by Mala Muñoz
and Diosa Femme.
Network.
Tengo diabetes.
Yo, asma.
Estamos en riesgo de contraer la neumonía neumocócica. 19 años o más con afecciones crónicas como asma, diabetes, EPOC o enfermedad cardíaca, o tienes 65 años o más, estás en mayor riesgo de contraer la neumonía neumocócica. Pregunta a tu médico o farmacéutico sobre Prevnar 20, una vacuna de Pfizer que puede ayudar a proteger contra la neumonía neumocócica con una sola dosis. Aunque te hayas vacunado previamente con otras vacunas contra la neumonía, Prevnar 20 puede ayudar a proveer protección adicional. Prevnar 20 está aprobada para adultos para ayudar a prevenir infecciones de 20 cepas de la bacteria que causa la neumonía neumocócica. La aprobación continua puede depender de un estudio de apoyo. No uses Prevnar 20 si has tenido una reacción alérgica grave a la vacuna o a sus componentes. Los adultos con sistemas inmunitarios debilitados pueden tener una respuesta reducida a la vacuna. Los efectos secundarios incluyen dolor e hinchazón en el área de la inyección, fatiga, dolor de cabeza, dolor muscular y en las coyunturas. Para obtener la información para la prescripción completa, llama al 1-855-213-2138 o visita Prevnar20enespañol.com.
Imagine you ask two people the same 7 questions. I'm Minnie Driver, and this was the idea I set out to explore in my podcast, Mini Questions. This year, we bring a whole new group of guests to answer the same 7 questions, including Courtney Cox, Rob Delaney, Liz Phair, and many, many more. Join me on season 3 of Mini Questions on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. 7 questions, limitless answers.
Hey there, I'm Dr. Maya Shankar, and I'm a scientist who studies human behavior. Many of us have experienced a moment in our lives that changes everything, that instantly divides our life into a before and an after. On my podcast, A Slight Change of Plans, I talk to people about navigating these moments. Their stories are full of candor and hard-won wisdom. And you'll hear from scientists who teach us how we can be more resilient in the face of change. Listen on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.